Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. Time now is 9:01 a.m., February 4th, 2025. It's Tuesday. Today at the committee, we have Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Kaufman, myself, Stedman, Senator Kronk is at another meeting in the building, and Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson are excused from today. We have one item on the agenda today. We're going to have the Office of Management and Budget, and they will present the FY25 supplemental budget, which were adjustments to this current year's budget that ends in June, end of June. So Ms. Lazy Sanders, she's the director. She can come forward, walk us through this after she introduces herself. And I think what we'll do is follow the same format we normally do. We'll have her do one page at a time, ask her to highlight the major issues that she sees or wants to call to the attention of the committee, and then we'll have any questions on those issues and or any other issues that committee members may want to ask, and then we'll roll to the next page.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Stedman. Members of the Senate Finance Committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Office of Management and Budget Director. Today, I'll be presenting an overview on the FY2025 supplemental requests that were transmitted to the legislature yesterday. Per Alaska Statute 3707-0701, supplemental requests are to be submitted to the legislature for consideration by the 15th day of legislative session, which is today, February 4th. To start off, Chair Stedman, I have a few remarks, and I'll walk through some high-level summaries, and then we can turn to the spreadsheet and walk through specific items.
Yep, that'll be fine.
Great. So on slide two, we have provided an updated version of the fiscal summary for fiscal year 2025, which incorporates the supplemental requests that were submitted. On the slide, I'll just use the little pointer here, there are agency operation supplementals total now $83.2 million in unrestricted general funds and $448 million in all funds. So this is a combination of both the supplementals that were submitted in the governor's December 15th budget as well as the supplementals that are being introduced today. The second area where we have supplementals is under statewide items. These total $14.3 million in unrestricted general funds and $15.1 million in all total funds. And then lastly, the third line that changed on this fiscal summary is under capital. There is a line now here for supplementals that are total zero general funds and $71.5 million in total funds. And again, I'll walk through various items that make up these numbers. The grand total for supplementals is $543.7 million, of which $97.5 million is unrestricted general funds. And as noted in our earlier presentations to the committee, we have the surplus deficit at the bottom. With the addition of the supplementals being presented today, it brings the overall deficit to $171.1 million. And that, again, is proposed to be drawn from the state's constitutional budget reserve, the CBR.
Okay. Before you go to the next page on the deficit issue, the 171.1, could you give us an idea of what the oil price would have to average to make that zero, where we won't have to go to the, because my understanding is we'd have to go to the savings account, the CBR, because statutory budget reserve is at zero. That leads us into the constitutional budget reserve that takes a three-quarter vote instead of a simple majority. So can you help us with what it takes to get out of this without going to a three-quarter vote?
Chair Stedman, I apologize. I don't have that number off of the top of my head. I can make sure we get it for the committee. I don't want to guess at what a number would be need to be for the remainder of the year or average for the year to get us to a balanced number.
So. Okay, that's fine. We can also have Ledge Finance help us with that, but that's something the committee would be interested in. Well, obviously, we have to watch volume, too, and the price. And maybe when you walk through these, today, you could point out items that we could possibly move into the FY26 budget.
Chair Sedman, happy to do that.
Okay.
So on, moving on to slide number three, we have total operating, a summary of the total operating requests. So at the top, you'll see here the December supplementals that were submitted to the legislature at that time, and then following the December 4th by agency, we've provided a summary of the amounts by fund group for each agency. I was going to walk through just a few high-level notes here, and then happy to take questions as we work through the spreadsheets again as well. So within the Department of Corrections, we have $4.1 million of unrestricted general funds. This addresses two items in the Department of Corrections budget. One is $3.9 million for the supervisory standby pay that was included in the bargaining agreement for the Department of Corrections. This is something that was not included in last year's budget request. It was an oversight when calculations were run for the personal services. So there is a request for both the governor's budget and for this item, ensuring that we have sufficient funding to meet the needs of the correctional officers within the institutions and other supervisors. I will say we continue to work with the Department of Corrections on their projections and ensuring that we are accounting for each item within their budget. And there has been substantial growth in this agency, so as we work through each item, we'll continue to bring items before the committee as they're identified. The other item that's included in here is $195,000 to fully fund the Dillingham Jail operations. This is a technical correction also from last year when there was a change by the legislature and to address community jails. The Dillingham Jail was underfunded by $195,000. That item is also in the governor's budget, and both of those items would need to be addressed in fiscal year 2025 and cannot be moved to the next year.
Okay, so I think just for clarity, we'll walk through this slide here, and then we'll, when we walk through the detail pages, these items will come back up,
yep.
And then we'll address the questions then. So we'll have the broad overview first. So we'll go ahead and continue.
All right. Under the Department of Education and Early Development, I'm going to highlight a change related to legislation that passed last year that impacts the Alaska Performance Scholarships and Alaska Education Grants. This was HB 148 that passed and impacts an additional 3,200 students. So not only did the amounts change related to the Alaska Performance Scholarship, but also the number of eligibility has increased. We've been working closely with the Department of Education and the University of Alaska to ensure that we have sufficient authority. There was a fiscal note that was passed, fiscal notes that were passed with this bill, and they were an estimate at a point in time. So this is just bringing the amount on record, so we have authority to get those students their performance scholarships or Alaska education grants. Thank you. Under the Department of Health, one of the big items that I'll note today is the $14.2 million and approximately $214 million of federal receipts. This is the updated numbers based on the December 15th projections for Medicaid. Those were presented to the legislature shortly after the budget came out, and we are bringing forward the supplemental that's in alignment with those projections that the department provided. And we'll continue to evaluate those projections over the coming months and ensure that we have sufficient funding in the budget to address Medicaid payments. Moving down to the Department of Law, there is $4 million to support ongoing litigation expenses associated with a Better Childhood lawsuit. There have been over $1.1 million pages of discovery that have been produced. Further discovery and depositions will take place in the months leading up to the trial, which is set for May 2025. Moving down to the university, you'll see a large increase and a fund source change from designated general funds. This is the university's receipts to other, which is statutory designated program receipts. Following the end of fiscal year 2024 and into 2025, the Office of Management and Budget and the university have been working together to clarify the receipts that the University of Alaska's budget has within it. This means clarifying what is pure general fund program receipts. Those are tuition that is collected primarily from students, it's primarily tuition that is collected from students. And then the university gets a substantial amount of non-federal grant awards. And so we're trying to true up the budget for the university to ensure that we have adequate receipt authority on the books to reflect what they anticipate getting from those non-federal agencies in grants. Under debt service, we have a slight reduction in both general funds and federal funds. This is due to some refunding of bonds that the Department of Revenue undertook over the last several months. And so there are associated increases to new bonds that have been distributed in the budget, but it nets to an overall reduction of $5.7 million. Under special appropriations, each year we bring before the legislature in the supplemental process amounts related to judgments and settlements to the state. There are four judgments and settlements captured in this $2.7 million. And as we work through the budget process over the coming months, if there are any additional judgments and settlements that are brought forward, we'll bring those to the committee, to the legislature for consideration as well. And then lastly, there is $3 million here under fund capitalizations. This is actually a reappropriation from a capital project. So you'll see a corresponding decrement in the capital slide on the next page. This is $3 million that was appropriated to the Department of Public Transportation and Public Facilities for earthquake relief federal ineligible costs. This funding was appropriated many years ago following the earthquake and has not been utilized or has not been needed. And so we are proposing reappropriating this to the Disaster Relief Fund to support the needs that we have in that account. Okay. Moving on to slide four, we've got a quick snapshot of the capital supplemental requests that are before the legislature. Starting off at the top here, we did not have any capital supplemental requests in the governor's budget. The first ones start in the February 4th release. Under the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, I'll highlight the $65 million in federal receipts. This is related to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, who has applied for two performance grants through the U.S. Department of Interior. These grants are related to orphan wells, plugging or mitigating orphan wells. And there is a formula distribution as well as a competitive grant. So there's $40 million for the performance grants and then $25 million for the formula grant. Under the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, we have two items that I'll highlight. $6.5 million for the Alaska Marine Highways System annual maintenance and overhauls of vessels. This is related to unanticipated increases related to the Columbia and Laconia steel repair projects. There's a Tustamina welding repair project that's underway and is continuing to have cost increases, as well as the Kennecott is having an overhaul of both the main engines. So that $6.5 million would be used to address those costs. And then lastly, we have the corresponding reappropriation from the capital budget for the earthquake funding going into the disaster relief fund. And so with that, if you'd like, I'm happy to turn over to the very, very large spreadsheet that's in the members' packets.
They're pages 1 through 8, so we'll just take one page at a time, and I'll give you the opportunity, Ms. Sanders, to highlight what's on these, each individual page, and then we'll look to the committee.
So, thank you, Chair Stedman. So I'll highlight the items that I talked about in my presentation and then offer the opportunity to answer questions specifically to those or other items that I didn't touch on.
Yeah, just excuse me for a second. We're going to have a brief at ease. Come back on the record. I apologize for the brief delay. We've got the spreadsheet up now. We have page 1 through 8 coming. Ms. Sanders.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. A real quick note for the record as well. I have several admin services directors in the room and other expertise on the line to address with questions as we go through. I may call on a lifeline as we walk through this.
That'll be fine.
All right. So on page one, the items that I specifically referenced within or just commented on in the slides as we were going through the presentation were line three and four related to the Department of Corrections for both the standby pay and the Dillingham operations. I also referenced lines 5 and 6 related to the Higher Education Investment Fund supporting the Alaska Performance Scholarship Awards and the Alaska Education Grants. And then a few other notes that we can talk about is there are two requests on lines 8 and 9 related to the Department of Health. One is for additional federal receipt authority for increases in grants. From substance abuse and mental health services. And then also we have an increase of $5 million on line 9, also related to federal grant authority. This is in maintaining the heating assistance program, or the HAP is also what it's known for. And this is just ensuring that we have sufficient federal authority to disperse the awards or to the grants to eligible applicants.
Senator Thiel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sanders, in corrections, I don't see, and maybe it was in the December supplemental request, but I don't see the federal inmate days reimbursement issue. I know the department has started trying to work on that, but they haven't hit a deal, and it's in the 26 request.
Through the chair, Senator Thiel, you are correct. OMB, myself, continue to work with the Department of Corrections on the federal mandates issue. We are working through right now evaluating how much they're actually experiencing month by month to come up with a projection to be able to bring before the committee if additional general funds would be necessary to offset that federal amount. You're correct. It's also in the 26 budget. So it is something I anticipate we'll be having a conversation with the committee about in the future.
So if I may, Mr. Chairman, so we should expect some amount to come forward in a future amendment?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I anticipate there will be some future amendment, yes.
Okay. And I'd like to thank OMB for working with the legislative side, trying to get a better handle on corrections. We've had exceptional growth in that department, as you referenced earlier, and I think we need to continue to work together on the modeling so we could get a handle on it before it handle hits us in the head with increases. And that's appreciated. On item number 9, when we start looking at LIHEAP, are we having problems moving funds through that agency to make sure people have their assistance to buy their heating fuel this winter? Or are we looking at a backlog like we had in the Hess arena?
Chair Stedman, I am not aware of a specific backlog related to the LIHEAP program. I know that there have been a lot of conversations over the last year surrounding the department's efforts to clear the SNAP backlog in public assistance. I can follow up with the department to get an update on their outstanding applications, and we can provide that to the committee so that there is awareness on which programs have outstanding applications to be processed.
My understanding is one of the members here at the committee that's not here is getting a significant amount of interest from his constituents that they're not getting their assistance on time, and here's now February. And so if you could check on that and get back to the committee so Senator Olson's office can respond to their constituents
yes.
with accurate information would be appreciated. And then if there is a problem, the committee would like to get a full briefing on it, because we don't want to have the issue that we've dealt with over in Hess with go on for a couple of years while we try to get a solution.
Chair Sedman, yes, we'll follow up with the committee and make sure we're appraised of any backlog or any outstanding issues we're facing in public assistance.
Right. Oh, I can speak louder. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to page number 2 of 8. Again, I spoke to line number 10 on this sheet, which is the Medicaid updated projections, bringing the FY 2025 budget in line with what the Medicaid program is experiencing. An additional item that I'll note is item 11. This is under the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and the Alaska Vocational Technical Education Program. If you'll recall, in the 26 budget, we are proposing an expansion of the industrial electrical program, an increase in doubling the size of that program at Avtec. There are costs associated with advertising and setting up this program to ensure that we have a full class and that the class is ready to go at the start of the next period. So we've got the director online if there are any questions related to expansion of that program. I also, let's see if I spoke about any of the other items. Doesn't look, item number 19 on the page is the last item I spoke about, which is one of the changes associated with the university and ensuring that we have sufficient and adequate budget authority online to address both their program receipts as well as their non-federal grant awards. So I'm happy to take questions about any of the other items if there's one in particular somebody has a question on.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the smaller ones just caught my eye, Ms. Sanders, the DOT stormwater plan tracker. It's interesting, and it sounds like it might be a good idea, but it's a new subscription, if I read the text right. Why is that a current year supplemental and not a next year request?
And could you please reference the line number you're on?
So it's line 17, DOT, Northern Highways and Aviation, Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan subscription fee.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the Department of Transportation would like to get the subscription underway as soon as possible in order to deter any potential violations and costs associated with those violations. So for the public, this allows the department to manage all of the permits associated with airports. And so by having a single point of system to track all of that, they can ensure that they're in compliance and not result in additional violation fees to the state.
Any other questions on 19 with the university? Why wasn't this done earlier if it's such a good idea, or wait till the following 26 budget that we're actually working on as we speak?
Chair Stedman, so as the university worked to close out their budget in 2024, so that would have been after the legislature left session last year, during the time period of July, August, and September, it became apparent that there wasn't sufficient authority to address all of the needs. And the scope and the volume of grants that the university is receiving has increased significantly. So over the last several months, we've worked very closely with the university to get a handle on how much authority is actually needed. And as we dug into that process, it became very apparent that the university was counting their non-federal grant awards in the category of general fund program receipts. In other state agencies, we categorize that funding as statutory designated program receipts. So we've just been working through with the university, them identifying all of those grant awards and what they expect to receive on an annual basis to clean this up and ensure that they have sufficient authority and aren't under budgeting what they have.
And on line 14, can you help us with line 14, please?
Yes. Chair Stedman, lines 13 and 14 are both for the Department of Revenues. They are related to the Alaska Retirement Management Board. Each year when we run calculations for salary adjustments, those including both the salaries associated with exempt employees, which was a bill that passed last session under SB 259, and then any supervisory positions that fall within that agency. We add interagency receipt authority where the positions are budgeted. So the positions aren't budgeted within the Alaska Retirement Management Board. They're budgeted within the Division of Treasury. That's interagency receipts. We have to have a corresponding budget item for the actual dollar to pay those interagency receipts in the Treasury Division. So these are both technical items to bring the authority online to pay from the retirement system to the positions that are working on those retirement accounts.
And then over the next few months, I'd like you to try to help the committee understand, when we have done these salary increases, what kind of increases in employment and retention are we gaining from the salary increases? Because my understanding, it's been very positively received by filling new hires, and it would be interesting to find out the magnitude of that, because those conversations were with different agency heads, and I think it'd be nice to see something more collectively put together by OMB, and we can have that discussion or with Ledge Finance or however you guys want to work that out, so we can get a handle on it. Because we expect several million dollars in salary adjustments coming at us over the next 3 months. Could be 20 or 30 million or something. significant number.
Chair Stedman, yes, we have been internally at OMB looking at the reduced vacancy over a significant period of time. And as I noted in my original presentation to the committee on the overview of the governor's budget, we are seeing the vacancy amounts in each agency, or not in agency, in each agency overall at a statewide picture starting to reduce. We're at about 16% right now, and I'm happy to work through with Ledge Finance or others to make sure the committee has information on the impact of what those salary increases have done.
Right, and that will be integrated into the salary report that we're study that we're hoping will be on time at the end of March. So we have time to take a look at it. Thank you.
So moving on to page three, if there are no other questions. Again, I think all of these items are on this page. Items 20 through 24 are related to the university's situation on truing up their budget. And same with page number four.
Okay. Do we have any questions on page number three or four at the university?
All right. Okay. So moving on to page number five. In my earlier comments, I spoke to items number 37 and 38 related to AOGCC's increased federal award. I will note a few other items. Item number 30 is in judiciary. This is a fund source change, and it is actually reflected as unrestricted general funds to unrestricted general funds, so it shows as a zero. During the COVID era, when we were receiving federal funds, a portion of one-time funding under the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds, or CSLRF, was awarded to the court system, and this is an oversight that was not corrected last year. It should have been replaced with State General Funds 1004. So that is that item. And then I think I also spoke to number 34, which is under the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for the Alaska Marine Highway System Vessel Overhaul. If there are other items, I'm happy to answer questions.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sanders, similar to my other question, I think on lines 34 and 36, we both have a couple of new software systems. Mm-hmm. Might be, or licensing agreements, might be good ideas, but why are they current year supplementals instead of requests coming in for planned things? I mean, one of these is a licensing issue. Those are usually pretty foreseeable sometime out with the vendors.
Let's start with item number 34. In the Alaska Energy Authority. When this item was originally brought to me, it was identified as a reappropriation. Reappropriations technically have to have an effective date as a supplemental June 30th before the funding lapses in a year. As we worked through the process, we identified that this wasn't truly a reappropriation and that it was just an appropriation from a fund that had a balance. That fund is inactive. So it's using up a balance of an old appropriation, not as a reappropriation, just as a balance of a fund. So that item could technically be moved to the next fiscal year. The AOGCC, I don't have a status. I know this is an incredibly old system. I don't know if Director Hannah Lager has information on the urgency surrounding, and I would defer to her.
Okay.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Hannah Lager, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. Through the chair to Senator Keel, this item is related to some in-kind match from a third-party organization where they are providing funding. It's called the Groundwater Protection Council, where they receive some federal funding that they are happy to spend on our behalf and assist with this project, but we have to be able to say that, yes, we are participating in a reasonable time to secure that alternative funding.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. If we could get the details on that time frame, that'd be helpful.
Okay. Thank you. You can help us with that. And then on line 39, dealing with flood mitigation in the Mat-Su, can you help us with that? And why wouldn't there be flood mitigation in Mendenhall Valley?
Chair Stedman, not through the chair, this item is related to a congressionally directed spending request that the Mat-Su submitted and is receiving a $2.5 million award for. They passed through the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. So this is ensuring that we have the federal receipt authority to accept that federal award and disperse it to the community.
Okay. Any other questions on page 5? Okay. Going on to page 6.
All right. On page 6, I noted item number 50, which is to address the ongoing litigation of a Better Childhood lawsuit, which is something that we are actively engaged in right now. The other three items at the top of the page are related to extending lapse dates and ensuring that we don't lapse federal funds that were provided under the coronavirus pandemic. And so I'm happy to take questions if there's questions on specific items.
Right. It'd be nice to have a brief synopsis on line 50, both paragraphs here from yourself or Department of Law or somebody, so we have an idea what we're paying for.
Chair Stedman, I have Assistant Attorney General Corey Mills online. She's here and can speak to the work that the department is taking on under this litigation.
Okay. Ms. Mills, are you online? There she is.
Yes, Chair Stedman and members of the committee, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead and identify yourself and help us with line 50 on the Department of Law's request for $4
million. Yes, happy to. So again, Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General over the Civil Division of the Department of Law. Appreciate the opportunity to enlighten the public on this one. So in 2022, the state of Alaska was sued, in particular the Office of Children's Services within, at the time, the Department of Health. That lawsuit is a class action, and they received that approval from the court, so it is a class action lawsuit that effectively looks to systemically change our child welfare system. So we call it an institutional or structural reform case, where the plaintiffs are really, the relief they're seeking is to completely change our system and have that done through the courts instead of through the legislature. And these cases can often take years to litigate. A number of states have been sued by this same group and received class actions. Some of them have settled and are now going on above $200 million that they're spending with a court monitor to basically have a court oversee their child welfare system. So we were one of the states that sued. I think it's about half the states in the United States that have been based on talking to other states and their experience of going through these lawsuits. We found that the best approach was to move quickly. So we're not trying to sit on this case a long time. We have a trial set for May 2025. We're using internal resources, but there's also over 1 million documents that have had to be disclosed in this case. And for that reason, the costs are, I hate to say it, but astronomical in comparison to a lot of our other lawsuits. The good news is we're on track to maybe spend $4 to $6 million. When we look at a state like Oregon, they actually spent about $18 million before they settled and spent another $10.8 million to pay to the attorneys for the plaintiffs here. So in the scheme of things, we're actually trying to do this as cost-effectively as possible and get this through to trial and hopefully have success so that the way to move forward with our child welfare system can remain within the hands of the legislature and the governor and out of the courts. That's our goal.
And Ms. Mills, maybe later on we can have more dialogue on the potential financial exposure so we kind of can keep an eye on that as we look forward to the next 2 or 3 years, trying to figure out how we're going to keep the keel under the boat at the finance table.
Chair Sidman, happy to do that. We have been monitoring a lot of cases, so I have a lot of information we'd be happy to share at any time.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Yes, go ahead. Go ahead, Kelly.
Thank you, Senator Sidman. Ms. Mills, if the legislature were to pass a bill that addressed the concerns of this organization, would that negate the lawsuit?
Through the chair, that's a good question. Based on what we have seen out of this particular plaintiff group and how they have acted around the United States, I would have my doubts about that because of what they are, the way they are trying to accomplish this. But you know, I can't answer for them. I just know that based on their behavior in other states, there hasn't been much that has pleased them into letting go of the lawsuit.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Mills. Okay. Go on to page number 7, please.
So page number 7 at the top, line 51, these are the judgments, claims, and settlements that I spoke of earlier, totaling just at $2.7 million. And then lines 52 through 56 and the first item on the next page, 57, are related to the Department of Revenue and the work that they did to refund series 2010A, 2015B, 2016A, and 2016B into reducing the cost to the state going into the future. And if there are questions on any of those items, I do have support online.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the first line on this page and the last line on the other, the 2.7 for judgments and claims, 2.6 is OCS. So I guess a question for the governor's office budget person is, do we have an issue that we need to be digging deeper into with OCS here?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, my limited knowledge on this case is it's a one-person instance, and I would defer to Ms. Mills to address the case specifically and provide more information on that, what surrounded that case and what the department has done to take steps to mitigate that case.
Do you have a follow-up?
No, Mr. Chairman, just saw the $4 million, $2.6 million. It's starting to smell hot, and I want to make sure there's no smoke. On another line, if I may?
Yeah, we can go to – let's go to Ms. Mills from the Department of Law to further explain your initial question, then we'll go to your second question. Ms. Mills, if you can help us with these judgment and claims of 2.622, that's $2,622,000, and we know we got the $9 at the end. It's the rest of it that sticks out. If you could help us with that.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Keel, Senator Keel, I apologize, Senator Keel. So looking at this, yes, this has nothing to do with the case regarding OCS, Office of Children's Services, and our child welfare system. This is actually an unemployment action. It began in 2017 when this particular employee was let go. The employee filed a wrongful termination and retaliatory discharge case. A jury award actually came out in the employee's favor at I think over $2.9 million. And then we were actually able to settle the case. We took it up to the Alaska Supreme Court. The Alaska Supreme Court agreed with us in part, disagreed with us in part, sent it back for a new trial. Before a new trial took place, we were able to settle it for about $1 million less than what the original jury award was. So that was an employment action, again, that started in 2017, and it just happened to get wrapped up now with a final judgment.
Okay, that's a pretty high-level answer, but you might want to get back to the committee in more detail on that particular case. It is a significant amount of money to have a misstep within an organization that costs us that much funds. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel. Yeah,
thank you. I was just thinking 17 to 25, that's about 8 years. What is that, $350,000 a year? I didn't think we had anybody outside the Gas Line Authority making that kind of money. If I may, on another line, Mr. Chairman, on the refunding of the bonds, most of those show savings. One of those lines shows an increased cost due to refunding bonds. Can you help us with the reason we got into a refunding that increased the debt service line for that series $3.6 million? I think that's the last line on the page, line 56.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. So there are four lines, 52, 53, 54, and 55, that are refunding specific debt from those years. And then there are two lines, 56 and 57, that are the issuance of the new series, which is an overall savings to the state. If you net them out. And so moving forward, the state would see a savings as our debt proceeds due to the lower rates that the Department of Revenue was able to achieve.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think there will be an interest in the committee at some point along the next month or month and a half or so to take a look at the debt of the state and the amortization going forward, and we can have the Department of Revenue come in and lay that out for us, because there has been questions amongst our colleagues on what is the debt level of the state, and it's actually we're in really good shape in that arena, but we need to get an update to the Finance Committee on that. So if Department of Revenue could start looking that direction, and it won't take them long to put that presentation together, but it'll be helpful. And we'll go into this refinancing issue in more detail for all the committee members so they understand mechanics of it.
Chair Stedman, yes, we also have folks online that have been listening from the Department of Revenue, so they'll make sure to make note and be prepared to bring that before the committee.
Yeah, I see Mr. Lamani on there. I'm sure he's paying attention to the and would like to come in, look forward to coming in and talking to us about the activity he's been working on in refinancing bonds, not only for the benefit of the state, but the benefit of the municipalities through the bond bank.
So if there are no other questions on page 7, I'll move to page 8. as noted in the previous discussion, line 57 is associated with the debt and the refunding of those debt projects. Line 58 is one that I mentioned earlier. This is a reappropriation that we are taking money that was appropriated for a capital project in DOT and depositing it into the disaster relief fund as we work to build the fund balance back up. And then lines 61, I'll just make note of this. This is related to the statewide deferred maintenance and renovation and repairs capital project that's submitted annually from the capital income fund to the Office of the Governor. The Alaska Capital Income Fund is subject to the sweep, and in an effort to ensure that we have the funding associated with those capital projects maintained, last year there was language added into the budget that allowed for the balance to be appropriated into the fund and not lapse at the end of the year for those capital projects. That language is being brought back again this year. It's a supplemental item. And I think that is it. Unless there are questions.
Could you help me with what the sweep is? Are we talking to janitorial services, or what are we talking here?
Chair Stedman, thank you for that question. So the constitutional budget requirement or constitutional budget reserve fund has a requirement that at the end of the fiscal year, when we have a liability to that fund, meaning we owe money to that fund, we are required to sweep balances of balances of the variety of other funds within the general fund into that account at the end of the fiscal year. And so that is what we refer to as the sweep.
So can you help us with what that debt is roughly and the interest rate that that debt carries? And then I'll have another follow-up question.
Chair Stedman, I don't have those details off at the top of my head. Great questions.
It's in excess of $10 billion. Zero interest due. There is no more amortization table on it for those watching at home. It's just a debt that we basically owe ourselves from technically borrowing money from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund to pay our deficit. At some point, technically, we're supposed to pay that back. But again, there's no interest charge. There's no time frame. So it's our holding account, our main savings account. But on the sweep, when we look at the accounts that gets swept into that debt, when there's a positive debt, as you referenced, the cash balances at the end of the year that are not encumbered get swept into the to this debt obligation. Is there other accounts that are problematic due to this sweep? In other words, especially dealing with cash flow, when you sweep an account in the 1st of July, when then there's no revenue in that account, and you have expenditures for July and August while you wait for revenues to accumulate and pick up to pay those obligations. Can you remind the committee how that's handled within the state agencies?
Yeah, to Chair Stedman, off of the top of my head, going off of my memory here, I can't think of a specific account where we have run into cash flow issues at the start of the fiscal year. We generally have, you know, cash flow borrowing from the CBR right now in the amount of about $400 to $500 million at the start of the year, just to meet where there are revenues that haven't come in quite yet. But specific to funds that are sweepable, I would need to go back and look at the list closely to determine if there would be any cash flow issues.
Yes, if you could do that, that would be beneficial. I wouldn't put it as number one on your priority list, but something we want to keep an eye on. There is some interest in seeing the technical question of when you sweep an account, it has a zero balance on July 1, even though the mechanical sweep may not happen until August, right? And then how are you making those payments and under what authority for July and August?
Yes.
It's more of a technical accounting breach of protocol question is what we're looking at, because there is some concern that we follow the accounting rules.
Yes.
And we don't want to have, you know, too many gray areas on that subject matter. We want clean, audited reports all the time.
Yep.
And we can do sweeps with the proper vote hurdle attained. And I think that's probably attainable when the legislative members realize that there isn't massive account balances sloshing around in these accounts. It's minimal account balances after OMB, your organization, scrubs them for the budget, takes everything you can possibly get your hands on, and then you send it to the legislature. We do crumb pickup from anything you left to move into the capital budget or other expenditures. So by the time OMB and House and Senate Finance Committees get done scrubbing those accounts, there's not even dust on the walls. And I don't think a lot of people realize how much scrutiny those accounts come under. Led to the, you know, the issue with the failing of a reverse sweep, which was for those watching at home, after the money is swept into the Constitutional Budget Reserve, we would remove it back to create beginning a cash balances on July 1. So the issue isn't dead. It's something that we want to make sure is properly accounted for, and there's no hanky-panky in the books. We have any other questions on any of these that the members may have? I would like to just make one final comment to OMB. It is, and I mentioned it earlier, it is appreciated, the work that both your office and the legislative groups have done on corrections. And we do look forward to working with the administration to try to come up with how we're going to not only properly account for so we don't have any surprises in corrections, but how we control the growth of it without having a bunch of criminals running on the streets. So we'll continue to work with you this winter on that. Any other questions, concerns before we adjourn? Okay, that will conclude the meeting today. Time is 9. That's 9:56. Tomorrow, February 5th, 9 a.m., Wednesday, we're going to have an overview presentation on the status of the public employee and teacher's retirement system. So that'll start at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. We are adjourned.